Welcome to this ICIS Chemicals podcast. I'm Will Beecham, Deputy Editor of ICIS Chemical Business, and I'm delighted to be joined this week by our regular commentators, Paul Hodges, Chairman of International eChem, author of the pH report, by Nigel Davis, our Insight Editor, and by John Richardson, who's a Senior Consultant based in Asia for ICIS. Well, this week, we'll take a closer look at the seismic shifts affecting the energy sector and tease out what they mean for chemicals. We'll also look at the World Economic Forum's Chemicals Action Group, which published its main findings in September, and Paul was expert advisor to that panel. But first, Nigel's been looking at the American Chemistry Council's annual review of North American light vehicles, which have not yet recovered from the pandemic. Although this is focused on North America, you know, it has global relevance, I think. It points out that the North American light vehicle industry required $50.6 billion worth of chemicals and chemical processing last year. And this is equivalent to just over $3,000 per vehicle. And that level hasn't really changed that much in the last 20 years. But I just wonder, Nigel, if you could start off, if we could just discuss a little bit about how, with the shift towards electric vehicles, with the changes in the automotive sector, how do you think usage of plastics might change over the next few years?
Well, it's always a fascinating report that comes out once a year. And, you know, you look at sort of the $3,000 equivalent of chemicals that go into a typical light vehicle in the US. And that's up from close to three. It's gone up a little, but it's even so. I mean, plastics percentage of the light total vehicle weight rose slightly to 9.1% in 2019, the American Chemistry Council says. So if you think about light weighting, if you think about fuel efficiency, then you're going to see more and more plastics in the vehicle. And if you've got traditionally powered vehicles, then, you know, we've got a situation at the moment where a lot of polypropylene goes into a typical light vehicle in the US now. Lots of polyurethanes, lots of nylon, bit of PVC and ABS, and some quite sophisticated and other engineering plastics as well. Don't forget the coatings. The coatings are amazing to me. I mean, I think 29 pounds dry weight of coatings, 221 pounds of fluids and lubricants, and 217 pounds of rubber. So, you know, I mean, you could ask the question, not only when does the US auto industry or the auto industry in Europe and elsewhere actually recover from this COVID-driven downturn? I think Oxford Economics and others, the analysis at ICIS is pointing to the second quarter of 2021. At the moment, there's only some marginal growth from last month, as it were, you know, growth from month to month. But of course, the overarching question is, you know, as we change the fuel, as we change the driving power for these vehicles, what's going to change? We're still going to need the polypropylene, the polyurethanes. Will we need as much nylon? Will we need as much of those sophisticated engineering plastics, which are clearly the materials that are resistant to temperature, are resistant to some of the extreme environments that you've got in a combustion engine driven vehicle? So that's the interesting one. And I think the ICIS view, certainly last year, was that we're going to see some change, certainly as we move towards electric vehicles, but it will be the development of autonomous vehicles and how our lifestyles change, really, and the way we use vehicles. As that changes, then the plastics going into vehicles will change too.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the fact that electric motors create a lot less heat than internal combustion engines. And also electric vehicles are much simpler, you know, fewer moving parts. Would you say that overall that the automotive sector is going to be like a bigger opportunity for chemicals, or do you think it might shrink over the years if electric vehicles are lighter, or if they just require less volume of chemicals?
No, I think, I mean, if you look at products like polycarbonate, if you look at products like some methylmethacrylate, PMMA, polymethylmethacrylate, and some of the other materials that you can use in cars, you can redesign the vehicle totally. And so therefore the volume of plastics certainly goes up. What will change is the mix of the plastics that go into the vehicle. And that's where, you know, the research will be done, and we will start to see automobile manufacturers actually, you know, buying different tonnages of different plastics, basically. But certainly, I think by weight or by volume, the plastic will go up quite, use will go up quite considerably.
Well, thanks. And just looking at the bigger picture on automotive, of course, if you look at the figures, the slump began way before the pandemic. You know, automotive sales were falling by in double digits in quite a lot of the main regions. What was driving that even pre-pandemic, Nigel?
I think that was the slowing economy. It was, you know, people being very cautious, certainly, as they saw a downturn coming. But also, it was really just this, because we've got a lot of legislation in various parts of the world now, certainly in Europe or in the EU, to actually drive down the not so much vehicle use, but pollution from combustion driven vehicles. So therefore, the costs of actually traveling in a car become much, much more. And so therefore, you know, have I got the most fuel efficient vehicle? Do I want to go out and buy another diesel vehicle now when I'm going to be slapped with the charge by my local authority for actually using it? You know, if you're in that situation, you hang off buying. And I think that's what we saw, particularly, as I said, within Europe.
Thanks. And this shift to electric vehicles, changes in driving habits, is, of course, affecting the energy mix that we have. So perhaps we could move on to discuss that and the shift towards green energy. It seems like the era of oil dominance in energy is drawing to a close. ExxonMobil has fallen out of the Dow Jones Industrial Index, and it's been there since 1928. BP was talking last week about peak oil possibly being happening last year or by mid-2020s at the latest. And the EU is targeting carbon emissions to be 55% below those of 1990 by 2030. John, you've been thinking about this quite a lot. So what do you think less oil production and refining means in terms of petrochemical feedstocks?
Well, I think you'll probably see some refineries shut down. I think, you know, obviously the structural change in demand for, you know, auto fuels was electrification of vehicles. I think with the pandemic, people won't be traveling to work as much. You won't be hiring cars as they go on holidays. And that's sort of accelerating the effect we're already seeing with you know, before the pandemic, with the movement towards electrification of vehicles, as the cost of renewable power comes down as well and battery technology improves. So, you know, your refinery feedstock may disappear for your cracker. And then there'll be pressure from the brand owners, the retailers and the legislators that where do you get your plastics feedstock from? How renewable is your plastics feedstock? So, you know, the mechanical recycling will increase as the technology improves, and also chemicals recycling. So, you know, where you've got mixed streams of plastics, which could be a lot easier. You're making naphtha from these mixed streams of plastics. And so instead of getting your naphtha from the refinery, get it from a chemical recycling plant. So I think we're in a huge change. And I think people are underestimating the pace of change, Will. One of the things that I think a lot of people talk about is they see the problems with waste management recycling systems. And there are lots of problems. They don't see the opportunity, and they don't realize that, you know, that the governments and companies will move very quickly to build new infrastructure systems that work.
The traditional petrochemical plant integrated to a refinery, do you think that could become history, and that they'll just be more isolated, obtaining recycled feedstocks more than virgin petrochemical feedstocks?
Well, I think as Paul said, it'll probably add that he believes that the coastal refineries will suffer first, and the ones, you know, further inland will probably be more protected. But yes, answer to your question, I think, and it'll be a lot quicker than people think. That traditional link between refineries and petrochemicals will change fundamentally as a lot of the refineries shut down. Yeah.
And what do you think of crude oil to chemicals technology? There's been quite a lot of talk about that.
Well, you need the demand for the virgin plastics first. I mean, yes. The principle there, of course, is that you're doing something else with the oil that you can't make into transportation fuels. And, you know, people spend a lot of time looking at process technology and the cost curves of process. In my experience at ICIS, the political and social factors have always trumped process technology, you know, traditional cost curves or, you know, conventional cost curves. And here, the political and social issue is that people won't want the virgin plastics as much. And you know, that push against plastic pollution. And I just sort of boomed to Will onto the issue of China here. And we're on the eve of this critical next five-year plan, the 14th, 2021, 2025. And there's a very, very good chance that China will invest a huge amount in plastic recycling. Modern industry doesn't have that at the moment. The story in renewables is quite remarkable in that it produces 70% of the world's solar panels. And this was signposted in the 12th and 13th five-year plans. China does what it says. You know, it said it was going to go into renewable energy in a big way. And it's done it. It dominates the global industry. And you can see that plastic recycling could be a next target for China to clean up its plastic waste problem and to make use of available local feedstock, which is all this plastic waste. So you could see then that that would have a huge effect on the ability of the virgin polymer exporters to export to China. And so it might take a couple of five-year plans for this to be, but don't underestimate the pace of change and what China can do in these new energy areas. You know, it's done it already in renewables, it could do it in plastic recycling.
And I guess that would tie in with China's drive to become more independent, less reliant on imported energy. Do you think that's one of the pushing factors?
Absolutely. Well, yeah. I mean, why import virgin hydrocarbons, oil and gas, and petrochemicals when you've got all this plastic waste sitting at home? Gives you energy, greater energy independence. Yes, absolutely.
And how quickly do you think this sort of push for recycling could happen in China? You think in the next 5 years, 10 years?
5 to 10 years could be a major transformation. We've seen it in renewables in 5 to 10 years, haven't we? That we've seen them grow from nowhere to 70% of global solar panels. So you could see, depends on what's in that five-year plan. We shall see. Study it. Yeah, it comes out next month. Well, the fifth plenum takes place next month. I mean, it's not just the policies, Will, but it's how they're implemented, and watch how they're implemented over the next 5 years.
From what you're saying, China could become like a major driver of chemical plastic recycling technology in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, and the thing is, I said this before, basically what China does is it pumps all this government money into something and it subsidizes really heavily. And then it will pick winners. So it'll set up, say, five companies in the sector, and it'll say to the five companies, look, only one of you is going to be successful, right? Four of you will fail. The one that's successful will make a fortune. We'll write off the debts of the four that fail. If you're any good at if you're any good at what you do when you work for the four companies that fail, you'll at least get a job with the winner. This is how the system's worked in China for many years, that they kind of give people that comfort when they're innovating. And this is why Shenzhen's become such a vibrant, alternative to Silicon Valley in many sectors. It's why Huawei dominates globally, you know, in telecoms technology. So you can see the same thing repeating in plastic recycling if they choose to go down that line.
Thank you. But Paul, this month you advised the World Economic Forum's Chemical and Advanced Materials Industry Action Group. It's reported back that the chemical industry has a crucial role to build back better. I like that slogan, after the pandemic. And it had sort of three main areas of action that the industry leaders could take. The first one being building a more resilient infrastructure to support more sustainable socioeconomic systems. Well, what do they mean by this?
Well, I think that what we're doing is we're mirroring what happened in the 1960s with the change from coal feedstocks to petrochemicals and to oil and gas, and run to petrochemicals. So, you know, if you were in the late 1950s or so, there weren't any petrochemicals. It was, you know, benzene and so on were all coal-based. And then the industry leaders took the visionary step of saying, oil is coming around, gas is coming around, we're going to, instead of continuing to build with coal, we're going to scrap coal and move to this new oil and gas for various reasons. And of course, that was the secret of the last 50, 60 years of fantastic growth. We go from a few million tons of plastics to 350 million tons of plastics a year and so on. And now we're on the verge of a similar shift. And, you know, will anybody now really be wanting to build a new cracker anywhere? And the answer is, I think it would be very difficult to get funding for it. You know, the ones that are there will, you know, that are funded will go. But I don't think that in future you will see large world scale crackers as being the key to profitability. They'll rather be white elephants. I mean, if you look at ARA, for example, Amsterdam, Rotterdam, Antwerp, that key network, I think it's almost inevitable that one or two of those refineries will shut over the next 12 to 18 months, because we know there's no demand for jet fuel. There's not so much demand for distillate. Gasoline's not doing very well. And of course, gasoline's going to be replaced by electric vehicles. So there's no market for those products anymore. So therefore, the refineries will shut, and therefore the petrochemical plants dependent on them will go. And that's really what we're saying in the in the report. You know, one of the key features, 83% of consumers say that it's important for companies to design products that can be reused, recycled, and never go to a landfill. Now, that is a complete change. That's what we mean by infrastructure. And, you know, with packaging, for example, the marketing companies in the fast-moving consumer companies and so on love to have black. They love to have all these fancy things. Well, they're impossible to recycle. So, you know, we're having these discussions with the marketing people there to say, look, I know you love black, I know you, but if, you know, it's more important for you, if you want to maintain your sales, to actually have a recyclable product. So you have to stop using it. And, you know, there's all sorts of experiments going on around Europe at the moment, things like Loop and so on, where consumer companies are delivering packages of delivering your detergent and so on, and then they're taking it away and refilling it. And supermarkets are allowing you to take in your own bottles and refill and so on. So, you know, new models are coming through very fast. And, you know, what we were saying at the leadership team, and this is some CEOs of some of the biggest companies involved, is this is actually a fantastic new opportunity. And so, you know, the way we're looking at it really is that, you know, one of the conclusions was that we need public and private partnerships here, venturing to develop chemical recycling processes and build the necessary physical assets. I mean, it's no use saying, oh, it's all very difficult. Yes, we know it's very difficult. That's the challenge. That's why people are going to make a lot of money out of getting it right. You know, if anybody could do it, it wouldn't be worth doing it. But we've got to completely change the collection system, which is hopeless at the moment. We've got to do recycling. We've got to turn that through 3D printing into plastic products again. And then we've got to sell them back on a local basis. And the people who get this right are going to make fortunes for the next 10, 20, 30 years. So, you know, as one door closes, another one opens. And that's really what we're talking about here.
It also mentions leveraging stimulus packages to support broader sustainability goals. What kind of opportunities are there for chemicals?
Well, a lot. And, you know, I think one of the realisations for me when working with the CEOs is just how slow the industry has been in general to cotton on to this. You know, the automotive industry has been there, all sorts of people have been there. We haven't. You know, we're in a kind of mindset. And actually, the report says, you know, in the past, what we've tended to do in these things is we've looked at fixed cost restructuring, you know, portfolio management, downsizing, and so on and so forth. But what we've got to do now is go on to the front foot. And we've got to be looking at cross-sector innovation and collaboration. So as you were saying, we've got to build back better, but also secure our role with improved products, services, and technologies. This is a window of opportunity for us here. The governments are very keen to put money into this area, and we have to come up with the projects that attract them to do that. No reason at all why you can't do that. I mean, we are one of the largest industries in the world, and this is the big opportunity.
Yeah, you mentioned collaboration, and that's one of the other sort of main points, is that innovation can be stimulated through more collaboration or collaborative ecosystems. What sort of partnerships do you think the chemical sector should focus on?
Well, I mean, we talk about it in the report, where we actually say there are hundreds of relevant startups across the world that are working with new technologies, but they can't scale without additional funding. You know, it's all very well, you know, if you go back 30 or 40 years, large companies did everything. They had their development sort of businesses, if you like, they had R&D and so on, and they would fund them directly. What's happened is those have now been, you know, left to one side. The company focuses on restructuring and fixed cost reduction and maximizing asset and so on, efficiency of assets, and all this new thinking happens somewhere else. Well, you know, what the report is saying is we actually need to bring them back together again pretty fast, you know, because small companies, you know, and you know, I, you know, chairman of Netech Solutions, which is making continuous process equipment. You know, the only reason we're in business is because we're working with the majors, and you know, we've got some majors who are very, very supportive of what we're doing, which is fantastic. And people like Croda and Arkema, which are in both in the public domain that we can talk about. And we need, you know, that is a model that works incredibly well, and we need to turbocharge that. You know, we need all the majors to actually not sort of saying, oh, well, I'm not sure about this, but actually getting on the front foot and saying, yes, we'll put some risk capital into it. And this is a big opportunity. If you do that, you can access public funding because, you know, this is the post-COVID society, the new normal, and we can move down that track.
Just finally, Paul, are you optimistic that the industry can step up to these kind of opportunities and challenges?
Yeah, I am, because I think I think in the past it was too easy to say, oh yes, it's all very interesting and very exciting and so on, but you understand we've got this business here, we need to manage it. Well, yeah, when you haven't got that business there anymore, I mean, take for example the challenge to the oil industry. You know, in Portugal, last month, Portugal bought solar at 13 euros per megawatt hour. Just think about that for a moment. 13 euros per megawatt hour delivered price of solar power. So that means you can actually afford to shut down all your fossil fuel infrastructure and transfer it over time. Well, it can't be done overnight, obviously, but you can transfer it over to renewables. And if you're going to do that, then of course the end of the petrochemical era is pretty fast. Now, given that we in the industry work on a 5 to 10 to 15 year time horizon, you know, that means that the writing is on the wall. Well, fine. So there isn't any more the excuse of, oh, well, it would be, you know, we've got this other business. So we haven't got the other business anymore. We've got to move. It's the same as with coal moving to oil and gas in the 50s and early 60s. I'm sure we will get the same visionary approach, the hard cash invested, the technology developed, and the markets captured. That's what we do well.
Paul, John and Nigel, thank you very much for joining me again. And if you'd like to learn more about the products and services that we have on offer, visit icis.com.